we are on a Friday. Weekend bankroll Dollar Loan Center. Pick against Clay and I at 1:30. That's going to be awesome. Haven't seen this gentleman in a while. Good to catch up with him, Dr. Caleb Henniger. Follow him and his colleagues at Crovetti Ortho on Twitter, Crovetti Orthopedics. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
It's well, we're going to the morning, good. And you said we don't know when you're in surgery. Don't doctors go real early in the morning? Isn't that like a thing?
You know, for whatever reason, we've taken it upon ourselves to get little sleep, and you're exactly right. You know, if you got people in the hospital to round on, you got to be there before your 7:30 start, and you got to be to the 7:30 start. It's about a half hour early, so yeah, you're usually dressed and ready to go by 6.
Wow. We've often wondered, like, why is it so early when you have to do these surgeries that it's like, you know, you have to have people there, like, by 5 in the morning, right? So they can get prepped.
Is that because people can't eat before?
Yeah, nobody likes to fast, you know? Right. You take food away from people, especially once you start taking water, nobody's happy.
It's not good.
They want that done, and they want it done now. So we get started pretty early. You guys are going to know all about that here pretty soon.
Yeah, we are.
How early are you going to have to be in?
I don't think there's going to be fasting or water, though. I mean, I think we'll have both of those.
Well, but we're smiling now, but, I mean, there are going to be sacrifices.
Yes.
You know, there's not going to be any late-night scotch or...
NYPD Blue.
NYPD Blue. You're going to have to watch out on that.
I'm going to have to get in the afternoon. So you're back with us. We're glad to have you back. It's always great to talk to you about the sports injuries and injuries throughout sports. I want to start with, because in Clay's update, we did the Ryder Cup. Tiger Woods went through so many things with his back, you know, and the fusion and the disc and everything. Are you surprised looking now at what he's been able to do with so many back issues? Or is this something to where if you're treated correctly over time, you can get back to a professional sports athlete level? Never mind a guy just walking around the street.
We talked early about how I knew it was going to take him a while. Right. And a while it has taken. But the likelihood of recovering fully after the procedures that he had are very good.
Okay.
And so I'm not surprised to see that he has done well, and I knew it would take some time, but I think he was smart about it. He took his time. He realized his body's not as young as it once was, but
right.
he knew some limitations, did the right, appropriate, and extensive therapy and treatment, and now look at him go.
Is he more susceptible now given age, given what he does for a living with the torque in the back, given he's already injured or nothing? What would make him more susceptible? Would it be age?
Having a previous back injury and a back surgery does leave you with a higher likelihood of having future problems.
Okay.
And age doesn't help. The disc only gets weaker over time. So you see fewer herniated discs in a young population than you do in an older population. And with that, the spine starts to get a little more of the arthritis type of picture in it. So he's definitely more susceptible as he goes forward. And he is beating on it pretty good.
Yeah.
I would have to think that maybe this is the last year he could go and do something like this, like a sustained, successive career where, like, you're doing, like matches every other week. You know, this was a schedule that he has not done in 5 years, but now it seems like this is probably he's putting his all into that. Is that possible? Where he's just giving us the best that he can do right now because he won't be able to do this again?
I think that's hard for me to say. I think that. You know, it is impressive to see how much he's done, but if he can hold up through it, I don't have a good reason to say he couldn't next year. But the more you do, the more successive, the less rest you take, the higher inflammation load you're developing, and the less likely you recover from it as quick. So we'll have to see how through the end of it all he does and what he decides to book himself for next year. We'll know, based on how aggressive he looks early next year, whether or not this was too hard on him.
A lot of fantasy football owners, including myself, week to week now with Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't practice during the week. He just kind of shows up on Saturday, throws around passes. That's his one day of practice. He's wearing the brace and hobbling around. From what you've been able to read or get from Aaron Rodgers' knee injury, is it something that if they sat him for a month, it would be fine? Or do you understand why they're letting him play each week?
The fact that they're letting him play tells me that there's not a case of instability, that there's some inflammation, that he strained his knee, and that's really as much as they've let go as far as
right.
how tight-lipped they are about it, that there's been a sprain. And what that tells me is that he stretched a ligament, that the ligament's still working, he has some inflammation in the knee, and it's stable enough to tolerate football. It's stable enough to protect him, so he's not at risk of really tearing it up. But the more he does, the more it swells and bothers him. So that's why they're limiting him quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I guess my next question is: this a year long thing? Well, is there any chance it completely gets better if he plays every week until the off season?
I think you'll see him need a lot of treatment throughout the year if he keeps it up, because rest is the way to get it to calm and heal.
Okay.
And if he keeps pushing it week to week, you'll see his recovery last longer.
It seems as though that he wants to go and continue to play. And also there's just that thing where he's like the focal point of a team. Do you ever feel like certain players are just going to go and just continue to play, like sitting 2 or 3 weeks in the middle of the season, or even in the early part of the season, is just not part of their competitive advantage?
And that's the commitment and level that these guys are at, is that, unless it's broken and I physically can't walk it, I'm going to. And you see, we've had players have a finger amputated so that they could still play in the game, as opposed to letting the thing get fixed. So there are heroic measures taken because they will not miss a game.
Dr. Caleb Penninger is here with us. He's a sports injury expert in Southern Nevada. GravettiOrtho.com. GravettiOrtho.com as well on Twitter. Check it out and find out the good work that they're doing online as well. Now, when you look at the NFL, this year it's all about roughing the passer penalties. And the penalty now seems to get more and more inclusive with writing, saying that it's about body compression. When you start landing on players body to body, that is what's drawing the flags right now. What are your feelings on that, as far as, like, you've watched football, you've attended to pro players and college players, high school players. Is this a possibility where, all right, can you actually make players go and tackle the right way and actually tackle in football, sacking the quarterback without body-to-body contact?
I think that it's going to get increasingly hard for these defensive players to make a play, because, did I hit him too high up? Did I lower my head too far? I think that we are smart to protect these guys, because, of course, a C-spine or a neck or a nerve injury, we've got to prevent that. But, this is football. You're going to get a rib fracture. You're going to get a contusion here and there. I know that some players are aiming to hurt people, and I think that we should be extra cautious, but you're really making it hard on these defensive. I mean, if you watch that video of Clay Matthews, the frustration of, how do I make this tackle? How can I make a play if I turn around and I've already had 3 rough in the passer penalties because you've taken away my options for making a play?
LeSean McCoy says he'll play this week against the Packers. He's missed with cracked rib cartilage, ran full speed this week, minor setback. Everything you've always heard about the ribs are, can you handle the pain? I mean, how much can you handle in terms of pain? I'm assuming they'll have the flat jacket on him to try to protect him more than just the shoulder pads. Cracked rib cartilage. I don't know if the bone is completely cracked at that point. What does this tell you in terms of how effective he could be? Is it a situation where he'll be okay? He just has to manage the pain.
Yeah. If there was a fracture of the rib that's loose to the point where he's really at risk of puncturing a lung or having some, then they're not going to be taking him down that path.
Right.
The cartilage is the surface where the bony part of the rib then connects to the sternum. And so you're getting the cartilaginous areas further toward the front of the chest, and there's some, and that's what it makes me think about when they're talking about cracked rib cartilage.
Okay.
If you get hit there again, it's going to hurt, and you better believe people are going to target that spot, because if they're like, hey, I'm not going to get a penalty for targeting this guy.
Right.
We'll go after him instead of the quarterback.
Nice safe hit, right?
And so it's pain-based, and if he's huffing and puffing and hurting, just taking a deep breath, if he's in a sprint in practice, then he's going to have a real hard time playing.
What's the difference between rib cartilage, bruised ribs, and cracked ribs?
We joke in the office sometimes. I mean, the definition of a broken body part is so different across the board. So you have people, and I'll come to the emergency department and say, hey, you have a broken ankle. And they say, well, they told me it's not broken, it's fractured. And I say, okay, I don't want to disrespect what someone told you. The terms usually mean the same thing.
Right.
Cracked, broken, fractured. A bruise can be more of like a stress type of fracture. So there's bone change, but not necessarily total separation of the bone parts.
I think that's what people, the people probably hear break and think total separation, but they want to hear fracture because they think it just might be like a small little, like you see the
like a hairline
all
fracture.
The guy, all the x-rays you see, that small little hairline thing. Well, I'll take that over a complete like break.
Exactly. And, you know, once the bone has that crack, it has. We need to keep it in line and we need to let it heal, whether it's totally displaced or whether it's perfectly lined up. But the discussion of cracked versus crushed versus
fractured
and bruised, the bone still has to heal. That's a slow process because bones take a little more time.
Sure.
And as long as it doesn't have to be plated and casted and put back together, it's a matter of just letting the pain resolve and letting the bone heal.
Crivetti Orthopedics is here with us with Dr. Caleb Pittiger. Go online, CrivettiOrtho.com, and learn more about the great people and the orthopedic nature. It's really the preeminent source here in Southern Nevada. We're here with the sports injury expert, Dr. Pittiger. Marcus Mariota is Titans quarterback. He's had several problems with the knee, with the arm, but this time around, the arm problem is one in which he has nerve damage. He cannot feel the football the way he needs to feel it, and they're throwing him out here this week because Blaine Gabbert, the backup, got a concussion. How often do you see hand and nerve problems in pitchers and in quarterbacks?
And the pitching group is the group we see it in more frequently. He described that he lost some sensation toward the ring finger and the small finger of his hand. And if you've ever hit your funny bone on something, what the funny bone truly is the nerve. It's not a bone at all, but the nerve slides through a little groove in the bone. And if you hit it on something, you'll feel that tingling, sharp sensation in your either running down your arm or toward the fingertips. And the video made it sound like he really landed on another player's cleat and got a contusion or somehow really injured the nerve by compression. And whereas if you bonk this on a wall or on a table and you have that very short-lasting symptom in your hand, this is persisted. So he still has it. And that tells me that there was a little more crush injury to the nerve.
Oh,
and
really?
Nerves are quite slow. They heal when a nerve... His injury, we talk about a millimeter per day. And if you consider how long the forearm is, if he injured it up at the elbow, it can take a long time for the nerve to heal. And that's what he's dealing with. And it's super common in throwers because the rotation and the stress they put on the elbow, every time they do it, it stretches that nerve. And if there's any little slippage of that nerve side to side, it will further irritate it. So we see it pretty commonly, more in pitchers, but the quarterback has a very similar mechanism and not uncommon. But unfortunately, his didn't come from the throwing injury, but now the throwing injury will continue to bother it. And it may prove to be a little bit of a lasting problem for him.
You hear bone bruise, and you wonder how Joey Bosa of the Chargers could say he'll be out half a year. But he has a bone bruise in his foot, and obviously... explosion from Joey Bosa to get to the quarterback is a big deal. This, I assume, is more than a bruise, or can bruises keep guys like this out that long?
Yeah, and as I was reading about his injury, there's some questionable tendon involvement or a tendon strain with
it. So every time he would plant, I'd imagine he's feeling something.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And the bone, like we talked about, fracture, bruise, whatever this is, the bone is slow. And if this is when he's hitting and if there's impact, if that's causing the pain, that impact will continue to hurt. If you've ever jumped off something a little high and landed on the back of your heel too hard and kind of not absorbed it right, when you bruise your heel or step on something real strong, that bone hurts for a while. And that's what he's dealing with, is waiting for the bone to heal, waiting for his tendon to recover, and if, you know, 6 months is a while or however long they're giving him, and it just suggests that he caused enough damage to the bone that it's taken some extra time.
We're speaking with Dr. Pittiger from Crivetti Orthopedics, going over NFL injuries for this week, including one in Seattle for angry Doug Baldwin, the wide receiver. Dude plays hard. He plays hardcore football. They held him out the last 2 weeks because of an MCL injury. They haven't diagnosed the severity of it, but you've brought this up before. Players can do MCL injuries as long as they're able to. It's really about controlling inflammation. Is that right?
Inflammation and making sure the knee's stable.
Yeah, stable.
If he doesn't have a high enough grade where there's some laxity, and if he can wear a brace that keeps him lined up and keeps him from having too much pain when he cuts and turns, then the knee should be safe. And often that's around 4 weeks, so he's going to be cutting it kind of close. But 4 to 6 weeks, usually, as long as it's not a full A full tear takes much longer, but a partial tear, 4-6 weeks, we should definitely see him back.
If poor Clay right now tried to leave the station and planted wrong, we don't want that to happen. But if he did that and blew out his ACL, I'm wondering, because Jimmy Garoppolo blows his ACL out, they take him to the tent, and they said the doctor there can do one or two tests, and he knows right away. They can do the MRI, but they know. You could see it in his face being carted off. He knew it was done. What are those tests? Like, what would you do to Clay? What do you do to the knee as the expert here that you would say, Clay, you just blew out your ACL?
There's a couple of tests that we do. The most common ones are when you're laying on your back, we'll draw the knee forward and see if the shin bone slides too far forward when we pull it. It means that that ligament no longer is stopping it.
Jeez, talking about it. Yeah. Clay's shin up in his leg and stuff. So right there, you understand. Do you know it's an ACL and MCL, or do you just know, okay, something's torn?
You often, when you get to it right away, it's much easier to tell than if this person shows up in your office in 3-4 days, because right off the bat, now the knee's not swollen. And the person is still, you know,
adrenaline,
and they're not so much inflamed and guarded. Right. So you can do the right tests a couple of times.
Right away.
If you get a trainer pulling on them, and then if you get a therapist pulling on them, then by the time you get there, they're going to be like, don't touch me.
Right.
Okay. But there's a couple tests. There's an anterior drawer. There's a Lockman maneuver where we hold and do a similar, basically a draw forward. And then there's a pivot shift test where we rotate the knee and see if the knee catches and buckles.
Is it every one of those tests hurting?
The pivot shift being the worst. Yeah.
Because they say when you do it, isn't there like a instantaneous pain? You just know, but then when you get up, you have no power on it, right? There's no support. You just know your knee. I've known people blow out their knees. It just felt wobbly. They said there was nothing there. It hurt in the instant, but afterwards they didn't say it hurt right away. It just was wobbly, and they knew, oh, this isn't right now.
Exactly. They'll report a pop, a sensation of something going.
Okay.
And if they, you know, they say, hey, I'm going to walk this off, let me get back in the game, they can tell. It doesn't respond. Their proprioception's changed. Their stability's changed. And even worse, if you talk about a combined injury with an MCL, or if there's been a meniscus tear, sometimes all three happen together. And then you really feel it if that's the case. But often you're right. These guys will walk off the field and say,
they know,
something just occurred, and we got to fix this. And hopefully you can get the diagnosis right there on the sideline. Yeah. We often will still obtain the MRI just because we want to know how bad was the MCL damaged, or where is this meniscus tear? Is it going to be easy to fix, hard to fix, fixable at all? So
okay, yeah. If he's going off in the cart, and like you see his face, he knows. They've already told him. Like and it was like 5 minutes, and they had him in the tent. 5 minutes, get him in the cart, and he knew going off that they had already told someone.
There was no mystery about it.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Aikman or whoever, but Aikman said, he goes, "Oh yeah, they'll do two tests, and they'll know before he gets on the cart if it's an ACL." And by the look of his face, he was just devastated.
Yep. Yeah, and the nice thing we have in most orthopedic injuries is you usually have a good side to compare it to, and it's quite obvious if you do the drawer test on this side or the Lockman on this side and compare it to the other side. There's a substantial difference.
The drawer test?
The anterior drawer. Yeah, that's that shift.
We got to do that to you. Yes, we really need to do the drawer test.
Let's lie down here
and have Dr. Penninger just start like messing with your knees. You might actually have a torn ACL and you wouldn't even know it.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, if I don't get to physical therapy pretty soon, I'm going to lose my
hip. Your bursitis has led to two ACL tears and a meniscus tear. You're just a mess.
If you're struggling with hip, knee, shoulder, or elbow problems, go to CrevettiOrtho.com and learn how Dr. Kayla Penninger, Dr. Mike Crevetti, and all their great staff and personnel are able to help you on an everyday basis. We talk athletes here with Dr. Kayla Penninger, but they help the everyday person as well as young athletes as well. And finally, all during the summer, we were talking of Shohei Ohtani of the Angels, and even you were like, this is awesome. I mean, to think of like a young man in his prime is able to go and be a two-way player. But you said something in April, you were like, beware, because you are putting an unusual amount of pressure and responsibility on a player who's going to try extra hard every time to get accepted. Mm-hmm. And here we are. We're in a position where now he is going to go and get Tommy John surgery. And also, Dr. Penninger spent a year with the Dr. James Institute, a fellowship, learning about the Tommy John surgery, as many of other things. They're going to have to go and take care of his elbow. He won't be able to pitch next year. But the Angels say, oh, he can hit. That'll be fine. And I have a feeling that management forced him to pitch later in this year, which actually really destroyed his elbow and the UCL. And they had no reason for it. Was there anything that you could see that they could surmise from the reason they held him out from pitching in the first place to then throwing him in there in a meaningless game in August?
I've wondered if he was going to end up with this surgery for a while. And I think that, you know, I read some of the responses and the feedback from critics of the team saying, what were they thinking? I mean, the truth is this guy can either pitch or he can't.
Right.
And if you want him to be a pitcher, we knew months ago he'd already tried the PRP injection, already tried the bone marrow injection, and he'd tried all the steps. And if they're not working, they're not working. And the only next step is to get the thing fixed.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's wrong to let a player try. If you know that you're on the tipping point, and if you tell the guy, hey, look, I mean, you're either going to be able to do it or you can't. And if you can do it, you've avoided the surgery. And if you can't do it, then we have a high, high likelihood of getting you back if we just go ahead and pull the trigger on this thing.
How long is the UCL? 6 months? Year?
It's about a year.
It's a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And
what a shame.
He was a good enough fielder and hitter, right, that – I think they fell in love with the idea of bringing him over and the publicity of being a pitcher and a hitter. It hadn't been done, and here's this guy. And I don't know if they pushed him or not, but I know they fell in love with the idea that they had this guy who could do both. But you see him hit, and I'm like, man, that guy's a good enough hitter where you should just play him and not risk the elbow. But now you're saying if they do the UCL, it's a whole year, so I assume next season he's just going to have to hit anyway. How will his hitting be affected by the UCL being repaired?
He's got to delay it shortly, but you get back to hitting much quicker. It shouldn't worsen him, shouldn't keep him from being able to do that, as long as he gives the initial recovery enough time. And then as he gets farther along in his rehab, they'll begin the throwing, but they're hitting before they're throwing.
I got to imagine this is a pretty busy time for you and everybody at Crivetti Ortho with football back and just the high school athletes alone, that this is probably a very busy September and October for you.
And the end of the year is always exciting and crazy at the same time.
Oh, yeah?
The slew of people in the community, of course, they look at their insurance and say, you know what? I've already paid this much. Let's go get this fixed. And we get,
yeah,
quite
get a lot of those guys, don't
we? Get quite a few people coming in. But the combination of the sports injuries, I mean, love taking care of the athletes, love taking care of the young people, and loves getting people that are just recreational golfers, tennis players back in their game. And so there's so many people that we get to help, and this time of year, you're totally right. It's about as busy as we get coming into October, November, December.
Well, we're moving to mornings, and we know his surgical schedule is heavy, but we're still going to do our best to get Dr. Caleb Henniger when we can get him off the operating people at Crivetti Ortho on Twitter. We'll figure out a way.
We'll figure out a way.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys.
Let those athletes go till 9 o'clock. Give them a sandwich or something.
What if
I was wondering about that. I know you guys go 24 hours on the fasting and the water, but explain quickly, because I've always wondered this. If poor Clay drops right now, there's a good chance he might. But the kid's already had his breakfast and his lunch, and you got to rush him into surgery. You don't get the fasting. So, yeah, the fasting helps, but it's not like it's life-threatening. Right? You get people all the time, I'm sure, in these emergency surgeries who've had a big meal.
Yeah, you need your strength, right?
Yeah. What's the deal with this fasting? Do you really need it?
Right. Do we really need it?
the fasting just keeps them safe from anesthesia. The anesthesia portion is when in doubt, I mean, there are favorite people in the operating room. They help us do what we do, but you're right. I mean,
yeah.
No. If we could do without the fasting, I'd be operating all day. People would love surgery. Surgery would be wonderful.
Those anesthesiologists, they always mess with people with the fasting. But, people are rushed into surgery all the time, right? On car
they
crashes
are.
And stuff.
It changes what the anesthesiologist does because in an emergency situation, they have to use extra precaution because they know the person ate. But on an elective surgery, it's a little bit of a faux pas to let them have breakfast and operate on the 10. So Clay would be in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, you'd have no chance.
Oh, there's no way. Well, Dr. Kevin Pittiger, it's awesome having you in. And let's figure out. We'll do something. Maybe we'll do a remote at the OR room, and we can get
That's
you on.
That's what we should there have you out there.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'd wheel you into the first room I saw. That would be wonderful.
But I wouldn't be able to get my winners for Weekend Bankroll.
Which is next, coming up on the Dollar Loan Center, Weekend Bankroll. Again, follow all the guys at Crovetti Ortho. Dr. Caleb Pittiger, thanks very much again.
Thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Back after this, get your picks ready.